This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, we'll check in with our Capitol Bureau and hear about the divergent path the Texas House and Senate seem to be taking. We'll also hear about some setbacks on property tax reform that should get you off the sidelines. And we'll hear about how the city of San Antonio is discriminating against Christian businesses. In our interview, we'll talk to Joanne Fleming about grassroots concerns over some mental health legislation. And we'll close with a commentary from Destin Sinsky, who'll tell us who's taxing Granny. Coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas, this is Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. You can find us on the web, www.texasscorecard.com. You can follow me on Twitter at @TweetTonyMac. If you want to subscribe to the program, go on to iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or Spotify. We're on there. And you can subscribe and never miss a program. It's good to be back in the studio, back here at the 1836 studios with Brandon Walton's Capitol Bureau Chief. We had a brief interlude where we went to the Capitol and saw our legislators spend all of our money.
Yeah, good to be out of the Capitol, by the way, generally speaking.
Well, I wanted to recap a little bit of what's gone on in the last week. We've started to see a little bit of division, a little difference in direction between the Texas House and the Texas Senate. Texas House, of course, passing a massive budget, 149-0. Mm-hmm. Even the conservative legislators very frustratingly voting yes on this budget. Frustrating, I think, for conservatives, budget night was. But you're seeing now the Senate doing some conservative things over the last week, giving a little bit of hope, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you started to see now the Senate, when they started out in January and started doing votes in February and such, marked by a lot of these big unanimous votes, these bipartisan spending sprees, and a lot of actions from the Senate that would disappoint conservatives. It seems they've taken a shift, maybe taken a notice from grassroots, and have started really fighting for conservative things. So you had a resolution this week supporting an emergency declaration on the southern border that came right on party line vote. This is actually the first legislation this entire session where you really had Republicans and Democrats against each other. You also had them passing out Senate Bill 17, a bill that would provide protect religious liberty for those who have occupational licenses. You also had Senate Bill 22, a pro-life bill that prevents local governments from giving money and giving these sweetheart lease deals to Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers. And so the Senate has, I think, taken the cue that the grassroots, the conservatives that elected them there, are getting pretty fed up with this kumbaya session. Unfortunately, in the House, it doesn't seem like they've gotten the same message.
Yeah, and so over on the House side, moving forward on a school finance plan, House Bill 3, called a reform, it's really just a big spending package.
Yeah, exactly. And anytime they put, they call it the Texas plan, I think that when you look at our colleague Carrie points out, anytime they haphazardly add Texas to the front of something, it's generally not very good to stand up on its own.
They're trying to wrap it in the ethos of Texas. Yeah,
exactly.
So the Texas solution was, of course, an amnesty plan a few years back.
Yeah, the Texas way was Obamacare expansion. Now we have the Texas plan. It's essentially a $9 billion spending spree on schools that offers very little for property tax reform. And I think property tax relief, and more importantly, does very, very little to actually get rid of. In fact, extends and doubles down on this Robin Hood recapture, which so many taxpayers and folks across the state have complained for years about.
Yeah, I think a lot of legislators supporting that bill are going to regret it in the end, because what's going to be remembered is that they doubled down on the Robin Hood system, and that's so frustrating for so many people out there. Well, it is good to see some differences, so we'll have to keep an eye on what the Senate does. Maybe the House will take some cues from the Senate and say, hey, we want to deliver on some stuff Republicans like.
Well, we got a month and a half left. Taxpayers are watching.
Next, let's turn to Carrie Cheshire, Vice President for Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, and talk about another issue going on in the legislature over on the House side. Legislators moving to gut a lot of the important provisions out of House Bill 2. This is the major property tax reform bill.
Well, that's right, Tony. Of course, House Bill 2, the major property tax reform bill, perhaps being an understatement, this is the bill that was announced at the beginning of the session with Governor Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, Speaker Dennis Bynum, and a sponsor in each chamber in the House, Dustin Burroughs, Chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, and in the Senate, Paul Bettencourt, Chairman of the Property Tax Committee. Marquee proposal that they had supposedly all agreed to really give taxpayers a voice on tax increases by saying that local governments can't increase your taxes by more than 2.5% a year.
Unless they get voter approval.
Unless they get voter approval. So if voters on a November election give an up or down vote and say, yes, we do want higher taxes, they can do that. But Dustin Burroughs moving really in the dead of night to strip out schools from the provision, which comprise about 45% of the average Texan's property tax bill.
Yeah, so that's a serious concern. So we started off with bills being filed on the Senate and House side, Senate Bill 2, House Bill 2. Senate Bill 2 now moving forward in the Senate, maybe you're getting close to coming to the floor of the Senate for a vote. House Bill 2, they were filed as the same, right? And they applied to pretty much every entity that could do property tax increases. And like you said, in the dead of night, the House saying, okay, we want to kick the schools out of this bill. Why are they saying that they're doing this?
Well, they're saying that, oh, we'll address the schools in a different bill, and we actually have to do this because of legal reasons, but those legal reasons don't really hold up when you...
I'm a lawyer. I don't know of any legal reason.
You're a lawyer. You don't know of any legal reason. If there is a legal reason, nobody's heard about it until 3 months from now. You had a big marquee proposal with legal problems in it. It's just not holding water. And by the way, the Senate's not taking the provision out.
So this is all very concerning. What can taxpayers be doing if they're looking at this saying, hey, this is going to cut half of my tax bill out of this reform effort?
Well, Tony, taxpayers need to be talking to their elected officials. They need to be talking to their member of the Texas Senate, telling them to hold the line on property tax reform, and talking to their lawmaker in the Texas House and ensuring that schools go back into the bill.
Thank you for that, Carrie. Now let's turn to Jacob Asmussen with Texas Scorecard's Central Texas Bureau. Jacob, the city of San Antonio is getting in a little hot water for discriminating against Christian businesses.
That's right, Tony. San Antonio City Council doesn't seem to like the Christian chicken that much. They recently voted to ban Chick-fil-A from their airport terminal because of their religious beliefs.
Yeah, so what is the city saying about this? How are they justifying it?
So Council Member Robert Trevino said that with this decision, City Council is reaffirming their commitment to being a champion of equality and inclusion right after excluding Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, of course, they're champions of equality and inclusion. They exclude a Christian business from the airport. That's inclusive. What are they complaining about? What is it that Chick-fil-A is doing that they think is wrong?
Yeah, so they complain that Chick-fil-A is giving money to radical organizations.
So like, what kind of radical groups?
Oh, some radical, including the Salvation Army, Fellowship of Christian Athletes.
I mean, you gotta be kidding me. Is everybody in San Antonio singing from the same song sheet on this? Are they united? We hate this Christian business. We hate Chick-fil-A. I guess we hate chicken sandwiches. I don't know. Is everybody down there crazy?
No, thankfully. In fact, Bexar County Commissioner Kevin Wolf pointed out the fact that the city is retaliating against somebody because of their beliefs. And he said, you know, if you can't stomach someone else's opinion, that's your prerogative. But your job as an elected official is to defend their right to have an opinion.
Yeah. And so there are some folks down there. What about statewide leaders? What has been some of the reaction to this?
Yeah. So Ted Cruz took to Twitter calling it ridiculous. He said the city of San Antonio residents don't deserve more rabid attacks against their favorite companies. They deserve more delicious chicken sandwiches.
Yeah, right.
And Greg Abbott also called it unacceptable. He actually said Attorney General Ken Paxton is going to investigate this decision.
Yes, yeah, so let's talk about that. So I guess the Attorney General coming in, investigating, I know we have laws, you know, certainly constitutional provisions preventing religious discrimination. City could be in trouble on that front.
Absolutely, Tony. They've retaliated against a company solely for their beliefs, and that's unacceptable.
Yeah, it's a, you know, I I venture to think that this is going to turn out well for Chick-fil-A. We've seen some attacks in the past from the far left on Chick-fil-A, which, you know, kind of infamously closed on Sundays as a Christian practice. Kind of easy to react to that. You say, hey, you know, I'm going to go order one of these delicious chicken sandwiches. and that's my way of fighting back against all of this left-wing oppression against Christians.
Yeah, you know what? If the biggest price I have to pay to support them is to get a delicious spicy chicken sandwich with waffle fries, I think I'm all right with that.
I appreciate your reporting on it, Jacob.
Thanks, Tony.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's my pleasure this week to welcome back on the program Joanne Fleming with Grassroots America, We the People. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much, Tony. Appreciate it.
So I wanted to bring you in to talk about the issue. You and a group of other activists recently had a press conference about some of the mental health bills that are moving through the legislature. And there's some alarm bells going off with the grassroots saying, hey, this legislation is, you know, on a bullet train in the legislature, and there are some questions that need to be asked. So I wanted to kind of get your take. Why are you and others concerned about this legislation that's moving forward in the legislature?
Well, this is, in a nutshell, it's a big nanny state mental health set of bills. The grandfather of them all is SB 10. And we just believe that big government is always bad for kids, teachers, parents, and taxpayers.
Yeah, and, this, and let's talk for people out there who aren't familiar. Senate Bill 10 passed out of the Senate 31-0. There was no real opposition. It creates a huge program. Was it $100 million? Is that right?
Yeah.
So $100 million for this mental health consortium to train physicians and teachers and people in schools, basically folks who are going to interact with kids on mental health. And that's being billed as, oh, this is a great thing, but certainly some folks have concerns about that.
Well, that's absolutely true, because anytime you give $100 million to set up a consortium, a framework for the 12 university chairs of psychiatry, plus what I call the completely dysfunctional HHSC. And
Health and Human Services.
Health and Human Services has a record of losing kids in foster care, mismanaging contracts, losing money, and has a revolving door of directors. So, you know, what could possibly go wrong if you have 12 chairs of psychiatry from universities plus HHSC heading this thing up? And, you know, it's not just that it's $100 million. We have to look back and see what the state already spends. You know, we believe that $7.6 billion that we already spend on mental health is more than enough to do the prudent thing with making sure parents know that there are resources for mental health. We don't believe classrooms should be turned into mental health facilities.
Yeah, but, we need parents making these choices and making the choices about what resources they need to be. So tell us a little bit about the press conference you had. Who participated? What are they saying? What are their concerns?
Well, we had an array of leaders. We had Cindy Asmussen from the Southern Baptist Convention of Texas. We had Tracy Bradford, who is the president of Texas Eagle Forum. Both of those ladies have done lots of work through the years, as everybody knows, protecting parental rights. We had Barbara Harless, who is a leader in the North Texas Citizens Lobby. We had Pastor Stephen Broden, who is a member of the State Republican Executive Committee. We had Rachel Malone, who is the Texas Director for Gun Owners of America. We had Alice Linehan, who's Vice President of Women on the Wall, and myself. And so, as an umbrella, we talked about this being a big government bill. We talked about it opening the door to stripping away parental rights and authorities, growing government, changing schools into mental health facilities, which would, by the way, open the door to signing up more and more people for Medicaid. We talked about, of course, the gun rights, the problem with due process, being violated with some of the, you know, Tony, the bottom line here is that there's always unintended consequences for a big government project.
Sure, absolutely.
That is, you know, for the good of the people.
So, let's talk about this context. So, obviously, this is being pushed forward in the wake of school shootings and those kinds of things, where you have leaders saying, look, hey, we've got people who have, you know, certainly in a vast population of students, there are students who need mental health care of some sort. We need to identify these children and get them resources. That's the way it's being advertised. What's the reaction to that?
Well, you know, this is part of a pattern that we're seeing across the nation. I mean, we have followed similar legislation, and it all goes back to, you know, okay, we've had school shootings, and so we're trying to figure out how we prevent school shootings. And so the idea is if we start very early down in pre-K and kindergarten and all the way through school, we can possibly profile and identify troubled children early. Well, it is a problem doing that because, first of all, that is something that most teachers and most school counselors, frankly, are not trained to decide the difference between learned bad behavior and mental illness. So this opens up all sorts of opportunities to mislabel children, that label will follow them throughout their school life and into the future. It also underscores the data mining, the privacy invasive record keeping that is being kept on school children now and being sold, by the way, to for-profit companies.
Sure. Well, let's talk about this sorting of children, because I think that's something that's, to me, when I look at it, I say, yeah, I can see the concern there. You're basically sifting through a haystack for a needle. You know, you're looking for somebody who's potentially dangerous, and it feels like, okay, you're going to see a lot of children be pushed into the, hey, this is a troubled child bucket. I mean, does that mean more psychotropic drugs, odd treatments? Is it interference with the family life? Does it suddenly bring the state into the home? What can we talk a little bit about some of those concerns?
Yes, all of those things. Because, you know, the Senate, once we raise the issue against the bill, and by the way, the fact that 31 Republicans and Democrats all agreed to sign on to the bill does not in any way ensure anybody that this is good public policy.
Sure.
Because we know how the process works. Somebody up above you wants the bill, and they want the bill badly, and so that you're told you either support this or some of your legislation won't see the light again.
And let's be clear, the governor, it's, you know, somebody above, it's Governor Abbott is out saying he wants something along these lines. Now, I don't know if they're directly responsible for every dot and tittle of the bill, but they're certainly calling for legislation on this front. And to your point, whenever there's no opposition in the legislature, everybody's saying, well, I think I've got to support this thing because the governor's for
it. And, you know, I'm not against crazy people getting help, you know, that there's no resistance to criticize and make changes to the legislation to say, hey, okay, maybe I'm for this concept, but I've got serious concerns about how we're approaching it. Unanimity means there's no sifting process.
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is, Tony, that this appears to be just this is a high profile way of saying we've done something. While, you know, the reality is that we already have existing laws and programs to support children that have special education needs, including mental health conditions. And, you know, we can go about doing this in a way that involves parents and involves teachers. I think teachers, a lot of teachers know what a problem is, but if they're being told that they have to give these mental health assessments to every child, can you imagine what that looks like? Do your mommy and dad, does your mommy and daddy ever fight? Do they ever disagree? Do they ever raise their voices? Do you ever feel like you are being bullied by members of your family? What child who has done something that is prohibited by a couple of parents, you know, you discipline the child. So now the child feels like they're being bullied by the parents. And so, you know, you've got all these goody-two-shoes people that are going to dig around into what a child is feeling about their parents, and before you know it, you might get a knock on the door from CPS.
Yeah. Well, and that's the only, that's the concern here is even if you identify something with a child or they feel or perceive that there's something going on there, ultimately it's the parents, you know, who are going to be making the actual medical decisions about the children. And so you're, in a sense, interposing the school authorities and others into that relationship between the parent and the child.
Well, absolutely. This is statism coming in and usurping parental authority. Because let's be really clear here. You know, the amendments that some of the senators made to SB 10, for example, that reinforces parental authority and parental consent, they don't call it informed consent. We know there's a difference between parental consent and informed consent, but they exempt school counselors. Who makes the referrals for the kids? The school counselors do. So, you know, again, this is big government that is just getting more access to family. And, you know, we have to be concerned about unintended consequences. We understand why they believe that there's got to be an attention paid to early intervention. We get that. But this is a big government way of doing it, and it will have bad consequences, just like all of the compassionate conservative, you know, legislation and No Child Left Behind.
Yeah, right. So,
you know,
it seems like to me that the part that's missing here and the danger with legislation like this is it's, you know, it's like a freight train. It's hard to stop. The part that's missing here is saying, hey, we need to get the parents more involved and more informed. You know, that needs to be the mantra, not that we're overriding parental decisions, but we're informing and empowering parents, not limiting them. I think that's kind of maybe an alternative approach that might catch some interest from the legislators.
Well, I think so. But you know, we just really have to be concerned about stigmatizing children at an early age.
Sure.
Because we all know that there's been this profiling of white males as being toxic.
Sure.
Toxic,
yeah, and that's the leftist culture that's
absolutely
coming out of these universities
yes,
that you potentially see feeding down into this consortium.
Yes, because, you know, boys and girls are different in an array of ways. And what used to be, you know, little boys being little boys, I don't know, you know, pulling a little girl's hair. I don't know, you know, finding an insect on the playground and throwing it on a little girl's hair or shirt. I mean, is that mental illness? Is that overt? Is that a personality profile that's going to be somebody that gets stigmatized as
sure,
unnecessarily aggressive?
Yeah. You know, that's the concern. That's the concern right there. The things that we typically expect of children, and not necessarily good behavior, but things that we just expect of children being categorized as something that's, you know, institutional, that sort of thing. Well, we're running out of time, but before we finish, tell folks how they can connect with you and with Grassroots America, We the People, if they care about this issue, want to learn more, and want to get involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, they can sign up for email alerts at gawtp.com. That's Grassroots America, We the People.com. Or they can follow us on social media at GAWTP.
Great. Well, thank you, Joanne, for joining us, sharing a little bit about this, and keep up the good work out there.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the time, Tony.
What are you doing Sunday evening? With the Texas legislative session back in full swing, we're spending our Sundays making sure you are staying informed with Sunday Scorecard, a product of Texas Scorecard TV. Catch the Texas Scorecard team and guests every Sunday at 7:30 p.m. live on the Empower Texans Facebook page to hear the latest news from Austin, D.C., or even your local city governments. That's Sunday Scorecard, live Sundays at 7:30 p.m. throughout the legislative session. You can find show archives and more information at texasscorecard.com. Join the conversation this Sunday evening.
Who wants to tax Granny? Destin Sinski will answer that in this week's commentary.
In January of this year, Texas Scorecard posed the following question: who is trying to tax Granny in 2019? The question appears to have finally been answered. Hi, I'm Destin Sinski, Capital Correspondent for Texas Scorecard, with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. In the opening weeks of the 86th Texas Legislature, lobbyists for nursing homes and their operators shopped around a plan to lawmakers that would revive a battle over the so-called granny tax from legislative sessions past. The idea? A tax on residents of nursing home facilities that Republican lawmakers rightly scuttled last session. In 2017, a small number of Republican state reps joined the entire Democrat caucus to pass the measure out of the Texas House. The bill eventually died in the Texas Senate, but now the policy is being revisited. Republican lawmakers J.D. Sheffield and Brian Hughes have filed the bill in their respective chambers, with a small number of bipartisan representatives and senators signing on to the bill. Though a few subtle changes have been included this time to try to carve some opponents out of the bill, in the end, the legislation is the same. In order to boost Medicaid reimbursements in the state through matching federal funds, many nursing homes and their operators are asking the state to tax Granny and redistribute the fees back to them. The Granny tax is sold as a quick fix method of shoring up the Texas budget by bringing tax dollars from the federal government. It is an increase on the types and quality of care that must be provided at nursing homes that will largely have the financial burden of its implementation disproportionately carried by the residents of those facilities who are able to afford to stay in them and on their own financial independence. That is, people who are economically able to afford to be in the facilities will face increased costs on their care in order to maximize the number of people who are not able to do so on a bed-by-bed basis. Sound like socialism? It is, in fact, a lot like the efforts by liberals to expand Medicaid, a socialistic redistribution of the costs associated with health care for the elderly, an idea conservatives have long opposed on the principle that Washington should not be in the business of coercing states to participate in government programs. By passing along increased fees to residents, the facilities and their operators become eligible to grab more money from the federal government that largely has little or no oversight on the way those tax dollars are spent, creating an opportunity for fraud and abuse. To make matters worse, stiff penalties of tens of thousands of dollars are also included in the bill to force compliance and participation. The policy became a point of contrast for voters to consider in the 2018 Republican primaries, with voters largely siding with conservatives who ran opposing the granny tax. Government should not be in the business of manipulating markets or coercing participation in social programs. Lawmakers, likewise, should be advocating for fair and transparent taxing, rather than disguising tax increases on small segments of society in order to enrich corporations and bureaucrats at the expense of the rest of the tax-paying public. I'm Destin Sinski, and this has been another Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Well, that's all the content I have for you this week. Before you go, as I mentioned at the top of the program, in addition to this show going out to radio stations around the state and going out via TexasScorecard.com, we also publish it as a podcast. So you can go to iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, basically all your podcasting platforms, and subscribe there and ensure you never miss a program. If you're already subscribing there, go on and give us a 5-star review. That helps other folks find the show and get informed. Thanks for listening, and join us back here next week for another episode.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.